When we think about volcanoes, there are many different ways to educate people of all ages about the ways that the natural environment interacts with its surroundings. But one of the things you may not be always familiar with is that video games can actually be an incredibly useful tool for teaching people about the natural environment, and in particular, volcanoes. So I'm very excited today to be joined by two people who have spent quite a bit of time actually delving into this area. So this is looking at volcanoes in video games, and also just the general earth and environment you find in video games. So I'm very excited today to be joined by Ed McGowan and Dr. Jasmine Scarlett. So hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So yes, it is really, really great to have you here. This is going to be very exciting. I've been wanting to chat about this before. Jasmine, you joined us in the last season, so we talked about some slightly different things last time. So your relationship with Le Soufrière on St. Vincent, and delving into sort of the historical records and the communities around there. And so this is a completely different area to what we talked about last time. And so what would be really great to start this off today is Jasmine, if you maybe just want to give a bit of a reintroduction to yourself, and then Ed, we can introduce you as well.
Yeah. My name is Jasmine, and I am now a flood resilience officer with the Environment Agency. And that role involves flood warnings, telemetry, so river level monitoring, and also community engagement. So I'm still kind of doing the sort of stuff I was doing previously, but now more in a professional capacity, I suppose.
And Ed?
Hi, my name's Ed. I'm a PhD student at the University of Leicester. I'm studying the volcanic deposits in the Lake District and trying to make sense of them and work out where a lot of the pyroclastic deposits came from, and where are the cold areas, how big were they, what was their eruption history. But I'm primarily taking like a geochemical approach to correlating them instead of the past approaches of using field data and matching up all the rocks that look the same.
Okay, very, very cool. So I think one thing that's quite nice here is both of what you do in your day jobs essentially is very, very different from what we're going to be talking about today. But what we'll talk about is that you have actually done research in the area of video games and volcanoes. So I guess the very first thing I want to hear from you both is, one, how this conversation actually came about. Where did it begin? I think there's probably quite a lot of us out there that maybe played video games through our childhood and continuing on as adults as well. But where was that kind of like curiosity of spark or thinking about, you know, geology and volcanoes? Where were you in your journey? So I guess Ed, we'll kickstart with you, if that's all right.
So for me, after I graduated from my master's, I ended up getting a job in a pharmaceutical company, as you do with a geology degree. But I really wanted to do a PhD in geology, so it was just a case of applying for them and then getting rejected and then waiting another year and applying for them. And I was really trying to keep my foot in the door with the geology world and, you know, keep on adding to my PhD applications every year, show that I'm trying to professionally continue my development. But the problem with having a full-time job was I had to deal with annual leave, and like if I wanted to do any geology, then it was a case of take a week out and lose that annual leave time to go and do some field work with someone, or especially wanted to get geochemical experience, but nobody would let sort of a random stranger into their labs for a week to use a very expensive piece of kit. So I was trying to find any way that I could, and to commute to work, I had to spend 45 minutes on the train each way, and I took my Switch with me just to play it, just as something to do on the train, and playing Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, I got really into like exploring the volcanic region, and I was replaying it through a second time, so this time I could sort of explore more and just enjoy the scenery. And I started to sort of look at what volcanic features I could find, and I started to notice some were really cool and interesting, Others were not accurate at all. I was just like, I really want to communicate this. How on earth can I do this? I only had Twitter, so that wasn't really much. But then I discovered on Twitter that there was a blog post that Jasmine had done about Spyro. And she'd done exactly what I was doing or like wanting to do, but she had her own website and had her own base to write it all up. So I sent her a message and said, hey, can I do this? And she said, sure, write up a blog post and I'll put it on my website. And so I did, and I absolutely loved it. And as soon as I finished, I said, can I do another one? And she said, I can see where this is going. And yeah, gave me access to her blog posts so that I could just do them myself instead of her having to deal with uploading all of the stuff that I was just throwing at her, basically.
Fantastic. Okay, so Jasmine, now you bring us back to that mark from your path as well. How did you get into that role?
So I've been pretty much playing video games since I was a kid and never stopped, basically. And so I have to try and remember the timeline of it. So this is before the end of days. So this is before the COVID pandemic. I think it was like a year or two before. But when Spyro Reignited Trilogy came out, so it was basically a remaster of the original PlayStation 1 games that I played when I was a kid. So I was like, I definitely want to play this for nostalgia and whatnot. So I got that on the Xbox One. I was running around in the first game, came across a level that has some lava falls in it. And I was just like, I literally just stopped. Like, I stopped Spyro from running around and killing things. I was like, why does it look like, why am I like, this doesn't feel right. Like, this doesn't feel like one lava fall should do. So basically, I decided, you know what, I'm going to find all the volcanology in the Spyro games. So I literally played all three games, finding all the levels that had some sort of volcanism in them. And then I was like, I'm going to take screenshots, I'm going to take video clips. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to just write up about it because why not, you know?
It must have been interesting coming to that perspective because you were in the middle of your PhD at the time. To then come back to that game from a completely different perspective, I imagine the very first time you played it, volcanoes and the accurate science of it wasn't on your mind.
It's definitely by accident, but I guess I was thinking about volcanoes at the time. Like, I don't know what it was, but I just saw this lava fall and it's like, what's up with that? And yeah, so it was a bit of curiosity and just a bit of happenstance, just coming across it and be like, what's going on here? So yeah, so then I wrote up his blog post, and yeah, then Ed reached out to me like, this is cool, can I have a go? It's like, yeah, go ahead. I did a few more. I do want to get back into it. I do have Assassin's Creed Odyssey to do because that was a very good one for ancient Greek volcanology. But I'll get there eventually.
So I love the range between those games, going from like Spyro all the way through to like Assassin's Creed. You could have picked maybe two more different kind of games, and yet they have a commonality in volcanoes.
Yeah, that's how I approach my games. I just play them because they seem cool, whether it's a cartoon dragon or...
It's what I do as well, exactly the same.
Yeah, we're an ancient Spartan, like... Just what's it would be like, oh, this is a cool game. So
what was then the motivation, you know, to like build a study around this then, as opposed to just, you know, so during the blog post and, as you say, capturing those screenshots and thinking about it, to going, actually, this is a tangible idea for geoscience research?
For me, for like thinking about taking it to the next step was actually the BMSG conference in 2020 at Plymouth. And being out of geology, I didn't have anything to present, and I was living in Leeds, which is a long way to travel to Plymouth, and paying conference fees just to attend and not show anything is a lot of money. So I was just like, is there anything that I could do at all? And then I saw a post that Jasmine was going through exactly the same thing, wanting to attend to say hi to all of our friends, but it's a long journey down there. So I just thought, why not present a poster on these video games and see how the VMSG community sort of receives it. And if they laugh at us, then fine, we keep on going with blogs. And if they say it's a stupid idea, like, why are you doing this? It's not science. Then yeah, we keep on doing it as a hobby. But instead, we got the complete opposite result, and everybody loved it, and they thought it was an amazing idea. And so after that, I just said to Jasmine, it's like, I want to write a paper on this. And just stepped it up a notch every time.
Well, no, because like from my perspective, Ed hadn't published a paper, and I had. So when I was writing my first paper, this is when I was in Denmark, I had my co-author mentor me how to write a paper. So I thought, let me give Ed that opportunity as well. So that's why Ed did all the work, because I was mentoring through his process. Like, this is what you have to do to write a paper.
And I really appreciated that as well. That was, yeah. It's like, I wanted co-author on this to help me, because I knew Jasmine had written something before. So,
and so I guess just out of curiosity for people, the title of this paper, you can find it. It's open access, which is great as well, of course, because this is the kind of information that the general public would want to be able to read about. And the actual article is written very, very well, that it's digestible for anyone. So it's in the EGU Geoscience Communication Journal. So the title is Volcanoes in Video Games, The Portrayal of Volcanoes in Commercial Off-the-Shelf Video Games and Their Learning Potential. So if you're curious actually about this paper, if you're listening or watching this, then I really would encourage you to go and give it a read, because it's very, very digestible for a general audience, which is great. I guess from your perspective, maybe, well, I guess from both of yours, because you know, you both read, you know, volcanology research and scientific research in journals. How did, you know, approaching this kind of paper feel different as opposed to, you know, your classic, I mean, it's got, you know, introductions and the methods you use, the result interpretation. So it's actually got the very standard formats of a regular paper, but yet the content within it is so, so different, the type of data analysis and what you're actually analyzing. So did it feel almost very strange to write this kind of paper?
Like, with the methods bit, like, that was most tricky, because, like, we literally just made up our own little silly categories, like, how plausible is the death? Like, we can't really put that in a methodology. I mean, we did, kind of, but, like we made, like, silly little, we made a silly little methodology, and it's like, how can we actually make this scientific? But, no, we got inspiration from papers that were out there already, basically, who had done things with video games. So there's a paper by, I forget his name, Ralph. He did one about, I think it was about academics who had trained like geographers and whatnot versus the public in determining, can they determine what is the realistic landscape, which is, and which landscape is from Breath of the Wild. And that was very, it was good inspiration in terms of thinking about, okay, so you can actually just flip it on its head, kind of like, use the video games as a subject matter and talk around it like that. But no, I enjoyed it. It was nice to, yes, we kept it kind of like this traditional kind of like outlay structure, but I mean, yeah, I think with that particular journal, we had the kind of freedom to be a little bit wild with what we put it in. So
okay, so I guess we've kind of talked about, you know, how we've got there, your journeys to get there. So let's actually dig into the nitty-gritty now and talk about the actual video games themselves. So one thing I find particularly, you know, when I do outreach and for young kids and teenagers now, the knowledge about what Obsidian is because of Minecraft is just incredible. I'll always use that as my number one example. But the number of students that know what Obsidian is because they've played Minecraft and they've poured water or thrown water onto the lava that you see, and it turns into this black glass that they can then utilize as tools. So immediately you can just see the value of education from essentially one of the simplest kinds of games without having, you know, a full story even in there or a narrative to go by, just exploring a natural environment. So that's just one example that I see very commonly, you know, when you talk to the public, and it's probably one of the most played generally out there if you pick out some of the others. But I guess, Ed, maybe tell me about, you know, some of the others. I'm sure there's a long list, but it'd be great to hear what ones in there have volcanoes. We'll get into the good, the bad, and the ugly later. But for now, it's just which ones have them.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Minecraft is always the big go-to. And even talking to, like, the other volcanologists in the community, we're talking to mostly the adults who don't play them, but they always say, oh, my kids know what obsidian is because of Minecraft, just always. But they've now actually added in basalt, andesite, diorite, granite, and recently tufts as well into Minecraft. So,
oh, into the actual blocks and the designs of them themselves. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, but actually thrown individual blocks. They're coded to generate sort of like pretty much randomly. So you won't get sort of like a granitic intrusion, and you won't get like a layer of tufts from a pyroclastic flow. They're just sort of here, there, everywhere. So that needs a bit of tweaking.
There you go. There's scope for a project. Someone to create a fully immersive volcanic environment for a teaching purpose. Come and look at the sills and the dikes, and now come and look at these tufts.
I think every single game that we pretty much looked at, if you're looking for volcanic features, you always tend to find a stratovolcano more often than not. And it's just pouring out lava as well. Those are the two main things that you'll find. Nice, typical, pointed volcano. Often over-steepened, but it's just gushing out lava a lot. But I have found it quite nice that if you don't find a stratovolcano, what you instead tend to find are calderas, which I would generally say is on the sort of more technical jargon side of volcanoes and the different types that you find. So it's really nice to see that sort of extreme side of them.
And yet they're included, which is quite something. I guess that almost comes onto a slightly separate question of, do the designers for these actually, you know, go and do the research about these things? I don't know if you have any insight into that, about what they do, you know, in the production room and the design room.
I only had one discussion with Ian Stewart about this, and he was called in to a game company who had made like a ski slope on an erupting volcano, and you could go up it. And he was looking at it, and he just went, "You clearly didn't ask a volcanologist before you made this, did you?" And they just went, "How can you tell?" But I do know with other games, I followed up on Subnautica, which is an underwater survival game, and the entire game is set within a submerged volcanic crater. I know that the developers for that did a bit of research on what they include and how they do that.
Yeah, but there's also active lava flows that are not quenching down there as well. So
good. So have you got like hydrothermal vents down there, and any submarine volcanic activity?
Yeah, there's lava yes. falls and lava flows just like a kilometer and a half underwater, and you're swimming through both okay. of them.
Do we see it in real life? Is one. So, do we have real life examples where this happens? So like lava falls, for example, very popular in all the games we looked at in one way or another. And yes, you do see them, but they don't behave the exact same way they do in the video games. Like, they do behave just like waterfalls. And of course, lava is not that runny, and we know this. So we're like kind of halfway there. So that was the main thing in terms of, do we actually have real life examples? Another is like, I don't know, is there some way you can like learn from these? Like, if you could take this into a classroom and be like, you've had a class, so you have a lecture on volcanology, what do you find in this? And it's like, can you actually identify it just with the naked eye? Like, is this a volcanic feature or not? And also the hazards as well. We looked at that different types of hazards as well, and some are overly portrayed. Lava flows and lava falls. Some are not as portrayed, like we don't have an well, in the paper, we don't have an instance of pyroclastic density currents, but I have got a screenshot of a pyroclastic density current that happened in the cutscene. So that's our only instance.
Yeah, so when you kind of went through, you know, all of these games, what sorts of, you know, like factors are you thinking about and taking into account from a research perspective? Like, what were you looking at?
It's a fact that we found a lahar, but we couldn't find a pyroclastic flow. Like, we found an example of a deposit of one, but not one actually in motion. But there's a full-on lahar level within Lara Croft, Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah, Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Yeah. That one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one for me. Yeah, then you have an actual sequence in the game where you got to, you can't outrun the lahar, but basically survive the lahar. And that happened as the volcano in the background was starting to erupt. So it's basically like an outbreak lahar that happens. So it's like, huh, okay, nice. And they're actually like the mechanics of that lahar were pretty accurate in terms of like the bulk density and like the water to like debris ratio and sediment ratio and stuff like that.
Lara's reaction as well when it comes crashing through and she swears, panics and runs in the opposite direction. I've had a lahar come directly towards me while in a river channel, and I can say from experience that is the exact reaction you give.
I guess it's not a very playable environment, is it, a pyroclastic flow? Yeah, I guess human reaction is also a really important part of it. It's, you don't necessarily want to portray, oh, okay, here's a lava flow, now let's just play some nice stepping stones. It actually adds a lot more realism to it when you have someone reacting to the environment. Here's a good one. Do you ever have characters that are, you know, affected by like temperature and gases by being in, you know, within those environments?
Yeah, there's a few. Lara in the Shadow of the Tomb Raider covers her mouth and coughs and sweats, I believe, around those environments. In Monster Hunter, if you stand on the lava, then you start taking burn damage, and you have sort of like a sweating animation as well. And Subnautica, there's a temperature gauge, and if it gets too hot, then you start taking more damage as well until you get a thermal suit that will protect you enough. Or walk through ash, and you got all the kids hiding in the piles of ash, and it's fine. That's one of my favorites. Yeah. I got asked in one of my PhD interviews, actually, what was the most realistic death? And I'd actually have to go with Minecraft, because if you jump into the lava, like, it's a lot trickier to get out of the lava than it is water, which shows that the lava does actually have viscosity to it. And that's something that's rarely included in a lot of video games. And then even afterwards, you take burn damage as well. So just because you've hopped out the lava, you're still not safe. But it is a lot more difficult. Like, it takes several goes and you have to get out at the right point.
See, this is why I need to play more video games, because I think my experience is just basically like the old Pokemon games where you can just, you know, I don't know, hop over them and just stand next to a lava lake and it's absolutely fine.
Or walk through ash and you got all the kids hiding in the piles of ash and it's fine.
Oh, yes, that's right. You got people just hiding in the ash and then they just jump out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorites.
Probably not a realistic. Yeah. Okay, yes, I guess for both of you, what do you think is the best portrayed either hazard or maybe game itself?
I got asked in one of my PhD interviews actually what was the most realistic death, and I'd actually have to go with Minecraft. Because if you jump into the lava, like, it's a lot trickier to get out of the lava than it is water, which shows that the lava does actually have viscosity to it. And that's something that's rarely included in a lot of video games. And then even afterwards, you take burn damage as well. So just because you've hopped out the lava, you're still not safe.
Okay, so some realistic component, others not so much. Jasmine.
Mine definitely has to be Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Like, not just the volcanic hazards apart from the ash, but the other hazards are portrayed in the game as well. So there's a tsunami portrayed in the game that's done quite well. There's also earthquakes. They kind of get it right, but more so than ever games, because these earthquakes are like basically precursor earthquakes to the volcanic eruption. It's pretty good. So, and of course, the only instance of a lahar that is done actually quite well. So that's definitely, I think, of course, not 100%, but definitely almost there.
Good. And I guess another area as well would be where can we kind of go from here now in terms of, is there a ways that we can improve it? Are there other games that maybe are looking at these kinds of things to improve upon? Or maybe are you seeing, you know, certain games that are advancing in their knowledge or incorporating more accurate environments over time? Maybe something, you know, that's been around for a long time. Stuff like, you know, Lara Croft or maybe Pokemon, Spyro.
I did hear the latest Forza game. They actually took, they went to a caldera in Mexico and they actually took like 3D scanning cameras of the caldera and scanned it to generate the map and then put a racetrack through it, because obviously. But that's an actual real caldera, apparently, that they're taking genuine data from.
So yeah, the benefit potentially of like UAV technology to create more accurate environments, at least from, there's only some things you'll be able to capture, but I think now, you know, there's so much good footage out there of lava flows, from particularly from drone footage, by being able to get up close.
I know they're doing it with Assassin's Creed as well. Like, they're not doing it generally with the geology, but the buildings and the landscapes, they're getting 3D models of it. In fact, actually, after the Notre Dame burnt down, architects are actually using Assassin's Creed Unity to rebuild the Notre Dame, because they created it in the game so accurately that you can just climb around the building and the architects can get those plans back, because they don't have the best blueprints.
So if anybody's ever in Paris and they see a guy up the scaffolding with a switch in his hand, just like...
just double checking.
Just checking out the blueprints as well at the same time.
Oh, well, that's really great. I mean, no, definitely the recent Assassin's Creed games, so Origins, Odyssey, and Valhalla, they do have a mode now where you don't do combat or anything, but you can just like explore the environment and you can learn more about the history and stuff that create that environment and like where they got their information from to create the certain costumes that people wear, certain architecture, stuff like that. And the next thing is we set in India. So obviously that's going to be like really interesting to see. So I think it was just before the era it's portrayed in, I think it's just at the start of colonialism of India or just before. So it'll be really interesting to see with that. I've forgotten the name of it, but I came across it. They're an indie company, but they're creating a game in a post apocalyptic environment from climate change. So then they actually are like speaking to scientists, climate change scientists, about what would the landscape like if we had the worst case scenario, basically, of like basically all the ice caps melting, all the glaciers melting, should I say, sorry, and stuff like that, like what would happen. And then it's going to be a survival game in terms of trying to rebuild after this catastrophic worst case scenario and climate change impacts have happened. I've forgotten the name of it though, and it's really annoying, but I can't remember it. I'll try and find it. Yeah, but it does look interesting.
Oh, I'll keep an eye out for it then. But that's a really interesting point. Kind of leads on into something I was going to ask anyway, which is the difference between, you know, a video game that incorporates an environment around, you know, the narrative and the story that's going on. It might just be to create a cool volcanic treacherous environment. It might be something kind of tied into the story versus an education, a geo-educational game and the games that we can actually use to teach. So is there stuff more in the works? I guess I've seen this in the revival of the Pokemon Snap, but also is it our Pokemon Arceus Legends, where you're a bit more of an explorer and a researcher? So your goal is to actually go out and document what you see around you. So basically, are they making science games now with these environments?
With Legends Arceus, that's what I've also written a paper on with another co-author that I met on Twitter. And yeah, we looked at the landscape and the environment because it's all based on Hokkaido in northern Japan, but then set in this fictional landscape called Hisui with Pokemon on it. But the entire outline of the map is exactly the same, the mountain ranges are pretty much the same. And so we looked at what features you could find in the game and how you could find them in the real world, and then how you could then learn from that way.
I should recommend that paper too, because I reviewed it, even though I said conflict of interest, but I still reviewed it.
Yeah, but it's a very, very niche area, to be fair. It gets a very, very very difficult to peer review when you have, like, here's geology, here's volcanology, and now let's pick out the people who have looked at video games. So, yeah, so this is also in the Geoscience Communication EGU journal. Again, open access, gold star. And so the potential for using video games to teach geoscience, learning about the geology and geomorphology of Hokkaido, Japan, from playing Pokemon Legends Arceus. So, yeah, another really, really good paper that just came out at, well, only about 6 months or so now. Not even that. Right? Yeah, nice job. And so I guess with that, you know, is there scope to make games more science-based and educational? Using, you know, using more accurate environments, but to actually get, you know, people playing games where they're actively almost doing scientific research, collecting samples, going and getting images. I guess that's kind of what you do in like Pokemon Snap. You'll go around taking images, taking them back to like learn more about the biodiversity of the areas, different areas around the world that you're in.
I think there's definitely potential. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm being biased because of being a scientist, and that's what I enjoy doing as in the real world. And so to get to do it in a video game is brilliant. But I do find, like, as a player, like experiencing video games that are more realistic and have things that you do see in the real world, I sort of connect with the game more. I feel more immersed in it than I do in unrealistic scenarios. So I feel like that is a good driving factor, and that it should be more developed on and improved.
Yeah, I agree. Of course, like, these games, they're not educational serious games. They are designed to entertain you. So, of course, there has to be some sort of give and compromise to how to put that science in it. But definitely, I feel if there's a bit of like a reward system in it, then that makes you more inclined to like, oh, I want to, basically, I want to get all the collectibles. I want to get that 100%. And so, because, well, for me, I can be a bit of a completionist of games. I'm trying to move away from that because it can be torture, but to myself. But some sort of incentive and sort of like reward system to be like, if you collect this amount, this certain amount, you get this, I don't know, this rare item or rare weapon or whatever. Just something to just make it more appealing to like, okay, I will do this side stuff, which is collect all the rocks or collect all the bugs or whatever. Just to give everyone some people a little bit of incentive.
Yeah, so there's a way to blend it in and merge in those kinds of missions. If only real field work was like that. You finish the end of the day and a nice golden chest appears and there's a little reward inside. I mean, sometimes that's just dinner, but just dinner at the end of the day.
That would be great.
And okay, so so along kind of like similar kind of lines, you know, do you think there's the potential, you know, if we think about the futures of these fields and the jobs that could be created, the world of video games is only going to be, you know, grow more so in terms of, you know, how we immerse ourselves in them, whether that's through virtual reality and CRISPR environment, sound, you know, the things you feel. Is there a potential, you know, for almost like jobs in this kind of sector for people to, you know, act as consultants for video games? Are those already kind of out there? You mentioned that briefly before, Ed, about, you know, people, somebody reaching out about the environment itself. Do you think there's actually scope for careers in this area?
I would hope so. And if so, I'm volunteering now. When I say volunteering, I'm saying that I could be hired. And I feel like Jasmine will say the same thing as well. Yeah, I want to be paid for this. I'm good at it. I will be paid for it. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it would be awesome. But actually, you do have examples. So, with Environment Agency, I think it was a year or a couple of years ago. I'm not entirely sure because I just joined the company, agency, whatever. But they, Environment Agency, and I think it was a group of scientists or different particular people in different parts of the sector, they actually teamed up with Microsoft to create their own version of Minecraft. It's called Rivercraft. I'm not sure how the collaboration came about. I think it was these different people in the environment agency who approached Minecraft. Microsoft made Minecraft. Like, hey, we want to use Minecraft to educate kids about flooding in England. Can we work something out? And then they actually, obviously, like the people that made Minecraft created these little, basically they create, I think it's 3 or 4 scenarios. I say, I think I should know this because I will be teaching using Rivercraft, very excited. But yeah, they've got one scenario in terms of build your own flood defense using different materials, see what happens. Do you protect properties or whatnot? And it's sort of like a score. So basically, different kids can have a go and they can also have a little bit of competition in terms of who gets the better score. There's a biodiversity one. So it is kind of like Pokemon Snap, that they get a camera and they get like a notebook, and they have to go around as their little Minecraft character, find different animals and like document what they find about them, find invasive species as well. They put invasive species in there as well. And another one is like a climate change scenario as well. So definitely there is possibilities. I think we need to be told more about them though. That'd be great.
As you say, it's interesting to almost hear that it was the science and the agency itself that approached the video games and the production, the producers and the designers themselves. And maybe that's more of the way in, is to actually bring these ideas forward rather than kind of waiting after the fact and going, oh, I wish they'd have reached out and spoken to a scientist about that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, so there's potential there, I guess. I mean, yeah, who knows? I guess we'll see where we go in the future. So what I kind of want to wrap things up today, I mean, we could probably just go through, and I'm very, very tempted to, you know, go and buy something after this. Absolutely. But from each of you, just to kind of hear, I guess, your favorite volcano video game memory or association, not necessarily, you know, the one that's best represented in the games, but for you personally, what do you most enjoy a certain scenario being in within a video game? I will start with Jasmine.
Okay, so mine is quite a funny one. So, I think it's funny to me. But haven't played it for a while now, but I used to play Sea of Thieves with a couple of friends I went to undergrad with. But Sea of Thieves basically is you're basically a pirate and you run around and do pirate stuff. But in this map, they it was like an update a couple of years ago. They introduced a complete new area with those different volcanic islands. And I was like, sweet, definitely got to go see those. So all these islands, they are very active volcanoes. And they basically decide to have some sort of, you know, challenge to like find a treasure. But at the same time, this volcano is erupting. What are you going to do? Well, one time we were sailing past one of these volcanic islands. And I felt like we were a safe distance away. So I was watching this volcano erupting in the distance. My other two friends were kind of like doing stuff on the ship and I was just like chilling, watching this volcanic eruption. And basically the main mechanic is there's these really big lava bombs. So of course, me with my science hat on, I was like, how do they travel so far considering they're so big?
That's not a ballistic trajectory.
Yeah, no, honestly. So like one of those bombs was getting closer and closer. And my friend says, like, I was just watching your like camera angle, your character's just like slowly looking up and up and up and up. And then actually this bomb like hit me and killed me. But I was like, but that was so far away. How the hell did it kill me? So I was like, it's a huge bomb. How does that, where's the drag? Like, how does it not slow down and fall in the water? Why did it? Anyway, so that was funny. I found that funny. It was like, I got distracted by thinking of the science that I died. But
oh, fantastic. But there you go. There's a teaching point. Lava bomb trajectories. There needs to be physics behind them.
The video of that's actually in our paper.
Yes, the video of it's in the paper.
Yeah, yeah. It's a video supplement. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
So you can go ahead and watch it.
Yes.
it's very entertaining.
Is the reaction alongside it?
No.
It's just watching it.
Can get your own reaction.
Fantastic. Oh, and Ed?
I'd say My main one would have to be Cinnabar Island from the Pokemon franchise, because Pokemon Gold and Silver were the first games I ever played. And I just, for some reason, I was always drawn to this island. Like, I was, what, 4 or 5 at the time. I just loved this island. I don't know why. I just did. Later found out it was volcanic, so maybe that was something. But like, one of the things I love about it is that in the first generation of games, the red, blue, green, when you go to Cinnabar, it's this fantastic, wonderful island. It's got the fire gym where you can get the volcano badge, and there's a lab which can reanimate fossils, which is awesome, you know, full Jurassic Park style, just not as deadly. And so, like, it's this really wonderful, like, utopia of science. And then when you play the next game, which is set 3 years after the first one, it's now erupted, and you go back to this island, it's got this volcano on it, and all the buildings been destroyed. There's a Pokemon Center there, but they say that they had to rebuild it. And like, Blaine, the gym leader, has now gone to a nearby island and carved out a sad little cave for himself in this island. So yeah, it's like, it's mainly from a nostalgia point of view, but I also love the fact that you see this before and after a volcanic eruption, see how the landscape's changed, which is something you don't see a lot in video games. They're erupting out and they're being really violent, and then afterwards they stop and the ash stops, the skies clear up, and it's all nice and calm, but nothing has changed in the landscape, which doesn't happen. But I love in this scenario, it does. They had to spread it across 2 games, but it works.
Yeah, as you say, for the continuation of those players who have, you know, grown up with it, they can see that. And then, of course, with the revivals of those, you know, like with Fire Red and Leaf Green and then Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they're able to go back and dig more into the details of those environments, and but still with the same storyline and narrative, which is quite nice to see that same accuracy, but just done in a crisper way.
It's also how they used it to show that time had passed, because a lot of the game is basically just the same. It's only been 3 years and not much changes, but they thought, how can we make a real big change, have a volcano erupt? And it works. So
no, really, really nice. So we kind of didn't talk about, you say, the time scales of these things, how you portray how things change over time, not just from the physical processes, but the hazards and the risk and how people are impacted. And just as you say there, you had a small iron community that was severely impacted by that. So there's so many different ways I think we've explored here of how you can use these video games to educate, but also to entertain and have fun at the same time. And so I'm really looking forward to just seeing it, even if I'm not playing them myself, or if it's, you know, for my kids of the next generation to come to, you know, advance on these even further. It's a really, really exciting field, not just in volcanology, but in natural and earth science in general. Well, with that, I think we can always go on and talk more about these. I'm definitely going to be downloading something later after this, or if I end up buying a new console, I'm going to send you both the invoice.
Yeah. Let us know which games you get. We can recommend some.
Yeah, there we go. Absolutely. Well, thank you both, Ed and Jasmine, for joining today. For the links for those papers and for your platforms as well, we'll put those on our website and tag it into the post themselves. So for those of you listening and watching, I really would encourage you to go and read those papers. They don't read like scientific papers. They're very, very, very digestible, very educational as well. So they're a really enjoyable read. And as I said, you know, you've got extra little nuggets in there, like you can watch the video of Jasmine's lava bomb seconds before her character was taken out. So there's realistic moments in there as well. So yeah, thank you for joining everybody who's listening or watching. Yeah, you've been listening to an episode of Volcanology, and we look forward to joining you the next time. So thank you once again to Ed and Jasmine for today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks.